ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, Text 25. Vishnu Maya Bhagavati Yaya Samohitam Jagat Adishta Prabhun Adishta Prabhunam Shena Karyarte Sambhavishyati Vishnu Maya, the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Bhagavati, as good as Bhagavan, and therefore known as Bhagavati. Yaya, by whom? Samohitam, captivated. Jagat, all the worlds, both material and spiritual. Adishta, being ordered. Prabhuna, by the Master. Amshena, with her different potential factors. Karyarte, for executing business. Sambhavishyati, would also appear. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The potency of the Lord, known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. Purport. Parasya Shakti Vividayushu Te from Shritashvatara Upanishad. In the Vedas, it is said that the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called by different names, such as Yogamaya and Mahamaya. Ultimately, however, the Lord's potency is one, exactly as electric potency is one, although it can act both to cool and to heat. The Lord's potency acts in both the spiritual and material worlds. In the spiritual world, the Lord's potency works as Yoga Maya, and in the material world, the same potency works as Mahamaya, exactly as electricity works in both a heater and a cooler. In the material world, this potency working as Mahamaya acts upon the conditioned souls to deprive them more and more of devotional service. It is said, Yaya Sammohita Jiva Atmanam Tri Gunatmakam. In the material world, the conditioned soul thinks of himself as a product of Triguna, the three modes of material nature. This is the bodily conception of life. Because of associating with the three gunas of the material potency, everyone identifies himself with his body. Someone is thinking he is a Brahmana, someone a Kshatriya, and someone a Vaishya or Shudra. Actually, however, one is neither a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, nor a Shudra. One is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, Mamayavamsa. But because of being covered by the material energy, Mahamaya, one identifies himself in these different ways. When the conditioned soul becomes liberated However, he thinks himself an eternal servant of Krishna. Jivarup Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. When he comes to that position, the same potency acting as Yogamaya increasingly helps him become purified and devote his energy to the service of the Lord. In either case, whether the soul is conditioned or liberated, the Lord is supreme. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya Dakshina Prakti Suyate Sacharacharam, it is by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that the material energy, Mahamaya, works upon the conditioned soul. Prakate Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvashaha Ahankara Vimud Atma Kartaham Iti Manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. That's from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 27. Within conditioned life, no one has freedom, but because one is bewildered, being subject to the rule of Mahamaya, one foolishly thinks himself independent. Ahankara vimud atma kart aham iti manyate. But when the conditioned soul becomes liberated by executing devotional service, he is given a greater and greater chance to relish a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and different transcendental statuses such as Dasya Rasa, Sakya Rasa, Vatsalya Rasa, and Madhurya Rasa. Thus, the Lord's potency, Vishnu Maya, has two features, Avaranika and Unmuka. When the Lord appeared, his potency came with him and acted in different ways. She acted as Yogamaya with Yashoda, Devaki, and other intimate relations of the Lord, and she acted in a different way with Kamsa, Shalva, and other asuras. By the order of Lord Krishna, his potency Yogamaya came with him and exhibited different activities according to the time and circumstances. Karyarthe sambhavishyati. Yogamaya acted differently to execute different purposes desired by the Lord. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:13, Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim praktim ashrita. The Mahatmas who fully surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord are directed by Yogamaya, whereas the Duratmas, those who are devoid of devotional service, are directed by Mahamaya. So that's the end of the purport. Om Agyana Timanandasya Gyananjana Shalakoya Chaksha Unmilitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Vishnur Maya Bhagavati Yayasa Mohitam Jagat Adishta Prabhu Nam Shena Karyate Sambhavishyati. The potency of the Lord, known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual. At the request of her master, she will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. So just to remind everybody of what's going on, I'll just read from text 20, translation, to where we are. So text 20, after reaching the shore of the ocean of milk, the demigods worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, the master of the whole universe, the supreme god of all gods, who provides for everyone and diminishes everyone's suffering. With great attention, they worship Lord Vishnu, who lies on the ocean of milk, by reciting the Vedic mantras known as Purusha Sukta. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Shri Dakshai Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and execute it attentively without delay. Lord Brahma informed the demigods, before we submitted our petition to the Lord, he was already aware of the distress on earth. Consequently, For as long as the Lord moves on earth to diminish its burden by his own potency in the form of time, all of you demigods should appear through plenary portions as sons and grandsons in the family of the Yadus. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. The foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarshan, who is known as Ananta. He is the origin of all incarnations within this material world. Previous to the appearance of Lord Krishna, this original Sankarshan will appear as Baladev, just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. And then what we have today, the potency of the Lord, known as Vishnumaya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. This potency, acting in different capacities, captivates all the worlds, both material and spiritual, at the request of her master. She will appear with her different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is giving the example how to Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya are, he sees them as the same. They're coming from the same source. And he says, just as an electrician can use electricity to either facilitate a cooler or an air conditioner or a heater, so in the same way, the Yoga Maya and Mahamaya are the same potency coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they function in a different way according to the living entity's consciousness. And it's interesting, I was just reading a couple days ago how for a devotee there is actually no material existence. For a pure devotee, he's seeing everything as Krishna's energy. And Maya is not necessarily a particular area. It's not a place. It's not that this material world is Maya, but rather Maya is a state of consciousness. It's the state of consciousness of forgetfulness of Krishna. If you forget Krishna, that means you're under the influence of Mahamaya. But the pure devotee could even be in this temporary world of inferior nature, but still be in Yoga Maya. He could still be absorbed. Just like, I think it was a week ago, we heard one quote of Prabhupada that Dharmatma Prabhu reads in the morning. In Melbourne, Australia, Srila Prabhupada was saying that this temple and this Melbourne area, I don't see it as Melbourne, Australia. I see it as Vaikuntha. I see it as the spiritual world. So this is the understanding that it's actually a state of consciousness. It's not necessarily a place that determines whether one is in under the influence of Yoga Maya or Mahamaya. And this is one of the basic understandings of our philosophy, is that actually nothing exists besides Krishna and his energies. There's nothing except for Krishna in one sense. The living entities are his energies, all our thoughts, everything that you can, that anything that exists that you can perceive is Krishna's energy. I was just reading the other day in Jivadharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the book is in the format of stories. They're not true characters, but there's stories to present the philosophy. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives this story about how this this Karmakandiya philosopher, he's debating with a Vaishnava, and this philosopher is explaining, or he's asking the Vaishnava what he thinks of Kali Ma or Durga, because this person is a worshipper of Durga, he's a Shakti worshipper. And the Vaishnava replies that actually this Durga Devi that you speak of is an expansion of Krishna's Sladini potency. This Mahamaya is an expansion of Srimati Radharani, So Yoga Maya, Maha Maya are Srimati Radharani's expansions, which is Krishna's Laudini potency. So in this purport, Prabhupada is explaining the different functions between Yoga Maya and Maha Maya, how Yoga Maya acts upon the pure devotees to facilitate Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world or in his Bhoma Leelas in the material universes. But this Maha Maya is actually, she acts as a filter, just like, you know, if you're making lemonade, we make lemonade every day. There's so many seeds that fall in the lemon juice. So you pour it through a filter before you put it in the jug that gets served out, so no seeds are served to the devotees. So in the same way, Mahamaya is acting as a filter. Those who are not ready to participate in the Lord's pastimes, they are kept here in the material world. And Prabhupada says one sentence, see if I could find it. He's saying how the Mahamaya, she is depriving the soul in this world of devotional service. So that's actually her duty. It's a service, like I was saying. Those who are not, those who would cause disturbance in Krishna's pastimes aren't allowed there. They have to stay here in this material world, which is compared to a prison house. This material world is compared to a prison house. And I was just thinking yesterday, I was reading a little bit, Easy Journey to Other Planets, Srila Prabhupada's book. And I was thinking how the astronaut, he cannot enter in outer space with his present body. He'll die within seconds. Therefore, they create a certain suit, a certain astronaut suit, so he can live in that atmosphere for some period of time. Or those who are deep sea diving, who go in the ocean for a long period of time, they need a special suit. So in the same way, the jivas who come to this material world, they need a material suit. They get a prison suit in this material world. And Prabhupada is saying in this purport that because of associating with the modes of material nature and identifying with the body, this false ego, this ahankara, makes us believe that we are the prison suit, that the prison suit is us. And then after many years of being here, we become conditioned to think that the prison, with all its restrictions, regulations, and punishments, is our natural habitat, and we become accustomed. And according to one's severity of crime, he is placed in lower or higher class prison cells or even prison buildings according to one's severity of punishment. So in the same way, I was listening to a class by my spiritual master, and he was explaining how in a prison house in this world, one is in a jail cell with bars, and he's surrounded by walls. He can't go anywhere. And even when he goes outside, he's handcuffed and he's restricted every time he has to go to the lunchroom to take food. There's guards watching with guns. And outside of the building, there's high walls with barbed wire fences. This is all to prevent the prisoner from escaping. But my spiritual master was saying that in the prison house of this material world, there's no guards with guns, there's no bars that are keeping us, there's no handcuffs that are restricting our movements, there's no walls with barbed wire fences, but we are keeping ourselves here by our proclivity for material enjoyment. We are the ones that keep ourselves imprisoned. We are free to go whenever we want. We can be under the protection of Yoga Maya whenever we want. It's just our desire that either keeps us in Maha Maya or Yoga Maya. So I thought that was an interesting point. And Srila Prabhupada explains also in this purport that according to one's karma and association with the modes of material nature, he gets a corresponding body. So he gets a corresponding prison suit. You know, a tree, an animal, or a human being. And then he goes on to say that even when one's identifying himself as a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Shudra, all these are also false identities. One can think I'm a very intellectual, philosophical prisoner. You're a Brahmana, still you're in prison, you're locked up. Or I'm protecting the other prisoners, I'm the Kshatriya prisoner. These are all false identities. There's a psychological disorder, a disease. It's called multiple personality disorder. And what this is people believe they are somebody who they are not. For example, myself, I'm a certain age, I'm in my 20s. My body was born in America, I'm from a certain family or whatever. But if I was somehow convinced that I was a 5-year-old little girl from Japan and I acted like that, everybody would consider me crazy. That's a mental illness. Because I'm not a 5-year-old girl from Japan. It's a multiple personality disorder. And some of these people who have this disease, they have more than one personality who they think they are. And some days they think they're somebody, and another day they think they're somebody else. So if from the viewpoint of us being Jivera Sarbhoy Krishnara Nitya Das, eternal servants of Krishna from the spiritual world, when we come here, we have a multiple personality disorder. One life we're thinking we're something, another life we're thinking we're someone else. Even now, at practicing devotional service, we may still identify ourselves as brahmacharis or Americans or whatever. These are all false identities. And Śrīla Prabhupāda also says in this purport that within conditioned life, no one has freedom. There is no freedom. So what does this mean? Sometimes in the West we're criticized for putting restrictions on ourselves, where we're actually obstructing our own freedom by following the four regular principles. People think that you guys are, slaves to some a spiritual organization or whatever, but it's actually quite the opposite. We know from Bhagavad Gita that what is night for the materialist is daytime for the self-controlled, and vice versa. That's that which is nighttime for the materialist, that which is daytime for the materialist is night for the introspective sage. So we have different perception of reality than those who are in gross bodily concept. And Śrīla Prabhupāda actually wrote an article in the 70s entitled, "Who is Crazy?" It was actually a small little pamphlet devotees were distributing. Śrīla Prabhupāda was explaining that they look at us and think that we're crazy because we're bowing down to deities and chanting the Maha Mantra. They think that's a weird thing to do. And we look at them and think that they're crazy because they think that freedom means having the freedom to have a personality disorder, having the freedom to walk around in a prison suit, eat hot dogs, watch television, drink beer. They don't know that they're actually a slave to their mind and their senses. In a class I was listening to a couple days ago, Śrīla Prabhupāda gave this example that just like a football, a soccer ball is being kicked around a field from one player to another. So the conditioned soul is being kicked by Kama and being passed to Krodha, and Krodha's kicking the ball back to Kama, and you're just bouncing back between your anartas, and the ball is thinking that he's free to roam around the field. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining how one is able to control his senses through the regulative principles of freedom, attains the supreme mercy of God. So these regulative principles are actually the way to get free from enslavement to the mind and the senses. Okay, just wanted to make that point. And Śrīla Prabhupāda was explaining how this yoga maya, she acts with Yashoda, Devaki, and other intimate relations of the Lord in a particular way. Many times they forget that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because this would hamper their intimate relationship with Him as a lover or a friend, or as a little son, little child. So Yogamaya covers those living entities so that they forget His supremacy, so they can act with Him in natural love. But we hear these things, but in all practicality, in my situation, I'm still here. You know, I'm in material consciousness, more or less. And even though I'm physically here in Vrindavan by Krishna's mercy, still my mind and my intelligence function as though I'm a material body. You know, that's just the reality. So the question arises, how do I get from where I'm at now, which is basically in Mahamaya, to be absorbed in Yogamaya? That's a good question. We know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahmandu Brahmate Kon Bhagavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bija, that the living entity, Prabhupada compares it to a Ferris wheel. What that is, it's a ride. It's like at an amusement park in the West, they have this ride where someone sits in a little device and it goes up and down and goes really high for enjoyment. Little kids go on it or whatever. So he gives the comparison that this whole material world is like a Ferris wheel. You go up to the heavenly planets, you go back down to the middle planets, hellish planets, you're just going up and down to different species of life. But when one gets the fortune of meeting spiritual master who gives them the mercy of Krishna, he gets the chance to get out of this samsara, this Ferris wheel of conditioned life, and go back home, back to Godhead. And human life itself is such a wonderful opportunity, because only in human form of life can we inquire about the nature of the absolute truth. You know, who am I? What is beyond this universe? What's the meaning to life? And Srila Prabhupada, in his explanation of the Brahma Samhita prayers, he gives this example how people often just naturally, by looking up at the stars at night, they start speculating about the stars' inhabitants. They start thinking about space and what's beyond, or when people are surrounded by nature, they more or less tend to be more philosophical, because it's more of a mode of goodness place. So human life is naturally, people are inquisitive to understand things. I recall, just for myself, I remember as a little child, maybe, I don't know, 6 years old or something, I would always hear, you know, in America, we have, most people have a very shallow understanding of religion. So we just hear, you know, if you do good things and you're a good person, you go to heaven when you die. You know, that's just kind of like what everybody says with the Christian background. It's not very philosophical. It's not really in depth. But I remember 6 years old, I asked my older cousin, and I was thinking, you know, if everybody who's a good person goes to heaven after they die, but where were we before we came here? Where were we before we were alive on earth? Is it that we came from heaven and that we fell down here and now we just have to do good things to go back to heaven? And I wasn't very satisfied with the answer. And I remember I went to a church one time, also maybe 6, 7, 8 years old, and he wasn't a pastor, but he was some sort of teacher. He was taking care of the kids. He told all the kids that, make sure when you pray to God that you don't make your prayer too long, because God has many prayers to answer, and if your prayer is too long, it's going to bother God, and He has many other things to do. And I remember just thinking to myself, like, this guy is just, he's acting like a teacher, but he's speculating. You know, he doesn't, how can he put limits on God? So even just at a young age, people are inquisitive. They're trying to find the truth. And I was also given two options when I was in school, in my science class. They either teach the Big Bang Theory or something called the Steady State Universe. The Steady State Universe is a theory by some scientists that say that the universe has no beginning and it has no end, but it's always expanding. So it's contrary to the Big Bang, where the Big Bang has a beginning and potentially will have an end, maybe in billions of years from now. So the teacher was saying, nobody knows for sure what exactly happened, but the scientists have concluded that it's one of two of these. You either have the Big Bang or the Steady State Universe. So you can choose whatever one you like best. That's what the science teacher told me. And again, I was just like, this person, they don't know what they're talking about. You know, he's acting like a teacher. They're just up here speculating. But the point being I'm trying to make is, man is naturally inquisitive, is naturally thoughtful. That's why we have so many categories of learning, the science and philosophy and logic, etc. But unfortunately, under the influence of misguided civilization, misguided senses, misguided Kali Yuga governments, this natural inquisitiveness to understand the absolute truth is oftentimes spoiled. You know, people are made to become dumb in Kali Yuga. So much sensory stimulation with the lower modes of nature, people don't really think so deeply anymore. It's really very rare to find someone who's actually a deep thinker, philosophical. I remember my very first day ever distributing books, I was brand new. I came to the temple, maybe after a couple weeks I still had long hair, and I don't think I was even chanting 16 rounds or anything at the time, but I went out with the devotees. They wanted me to just have that experience and get some of their association, but they gave me a few books to try to stop people. We went to this Hispanic neighborhood with a lot of Spanish people, and I remember I'll never forget this because it was kind of like a wake-up call for me. I approached some girl who was about my age, and I tried to give her the books, and she wasn't interested. And this was, I think this was the very first person I ever tried to distribute books to. She was not interested. And I was really confused why she wasn't interested. And I said, but these books, I mean, they talk about the meaning to life, what's beyond death, where we came from. And I said, don't you ever question these things? Haven't you ever wondered, where am I from? Why do I exist? Where did this world come from? And she just like, no, I never thought about that before. And she was, I could tell she was not interested in the subject. And I found this very startling. I thought that everybody, I was very naive. I thought that somehow everybody was questioning things, these subjects. But unfortunately, people are more interested in temporary sense gratification. But even when people are somewhat intelligent, you know, they may be learned in science or whatever, philosophy, most of the times they fall into the category of mayaya paritigyana, or their erudition and their scholarship is under the influence of the modes of material nature. I remember Mukunda Dat Prabhu, the Prabhupada disciple, he was saying when he was studying in a university, he was studying Asian philosophy, and he was saying how a lot of the students and the teachers, they know our Vaishnava philosophy better than most devotees. They know it in detail, but they are not themselves devotees. They are not surrendered. And Prabhupada also says this in the Bhagavad Gita, in the verse where he describes the four impious people who don't surrender to Krishna. The mayaya paritigyana, Srila Prabhupada says in his purport, they may even be learned scholars in the Bhagavad Gita. They may be expert in Sanskrit, but still they interpret Bhagavad Gita in their own opinion, in their own words. Therefore, their knowledge is stolen by illusion. And in the next verse we hear, of the four people who do surrender to Krishna, you know, the distressed, the desire of wealth, those who are searching for the absolute truth, those who are inquisitive. But if we look around, most of the people in this world actually fall into those four categories, but they don't surrender. Only very few of them do. So just as Arjuna asks Krishna in the third chapter, what is that thing that impels one to engage in sinful activities almost by force? So I have a similar question that I will also give an answer to. What is that thing that impels one to perform devotional service? What is that thing? And the thing is, generally the answer is Sukriti. A lot of the times it's Agyata Sukriti, or unknown pious, spiritual pious credit, which is born of contact with the mercy of a pure devotee in a variety of ways. So we can see most people that are here in this room or participating in Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement most probably have performed some sort of devotional service in a previous life, and from accumulated Sukriti will eventually fructify in his eligibility or his accepting full-time devotional service. And I used to wonder, you know, we're distributing so many books, we're doing so many preaching activities like in the West, but it doesn't seem like so many people are taking the path very serious. So I had some doubts. But then I also was thinking, but this is actually like a Sukriti machine. What we're doing, we're just pumping out so many opportunities for people to come to devotional service on a large scale, on a mass scale. We're giving millions of people the opportunity. And from that accumulated Sukriti, eventually what happens is someone gets a book or whatever, they may not read it, or they may hear the holy names, and their next life they come in contact with the devotional service again, and it adds up until their Shraddha becomes stronger, until they actually read the philosophy, and intellectually, theoretically, the philosophy will then make sense to them. Many people read the books but they don't understand it, or like I said, the scholars who study Bhagavad Gita, they don't have a tendency to surrender, is because of a lack of Sukriti. But when that Sukriti is accumulated, when they do read the philosophy, they will say, hey, this makes sense. Let me look into it a little more. That Shraddha is there. That Shraddha fructifies. And from that Shraddha, from reading more, he'll become more inquisitive. He'll want to learn from people who are actually on the path. And that's when he'll search for sadhu sangha, association with devotees. And eventually, from that association, he'll want to perform those activities the devotees are performing. And then that bhajana kriya, that is devotional service, actually starts in a tangible way. And we hear, you know, Bhagavatam describes how those who are performing devotional service, they have visited all the holy places, they've bathed in all the holy rivers, they've performed so many ritualistic activities in their past life. So one of my questions also is, should we take this literal? Does that mean that every single devotee has performed all those activities in their past life? Or is it that performing devotional service is as good as performing all those activities? You get the same result plus more. Just like if you have $100, you automatically have $10, $20, $50 within that. So I actually asked Dhanavir, you understand the question? I asked Dhanavir Maharaj that question, and he thought it was an interesting point. He didn't have a solid answer, but that makes sense to me. But we do know, at least on one occasion, one disciple of Srila Prabhupada asked Prabhupada this question, that does this mean that all the devotees in our movement have visited all the holy places, bathed in all the rivers, etc.? And Srila Prabhupada said that, I created your fortune. You know? So even if you didn't perform many pious activities in the past, by coming in contact with the pure devotee, that itself is the most pious, most potent thing for you to take up full-time devotional service. And Hridayananda Goswami, who's a great scholar in our movement, he is of the opinion that many ISKCON devotees put too much stress and importance on Agyata Sukriti. I remember in one class listening, he was questioning how potent it actually is. And are we to be just some Sukriti machine that we just give out books and Harinam and then we move on our way? And he said that this may be a little bit laziness on the devotee's part. He said it may take that we actually spend a lot of time with the people. We create friendships with the non-devotees, and we teach them the philosophy in a way that's easy for them to understand. He says it takes more time and energy to do this, but he said that this is what will actually spread the movement. I'm not saying I agree with that, and I'm not saying I disagree with that. I just thought it was an interesting point, his opinion, something to think about. But nonetheless, however we come to devotional service, we know that one of the most important, or if not the most important, aspects of our life is the association of devotees, the sadhu sangha. This keeps us protected from falling into yoga maya completely again. And oftentimes we hear that the five most potent forms of devotional service, oftentimes it's described how chanting Harinam is the most important. I would like to add maybe another perspective. I would say possibly even sadhu sangha is the most important. And the reason why I say this is because there have been cases, real life cases, where devotees have had difficulties in their devotional practice. They may even stop chanting. They may have difficulties following the four regulative principles. But because they stay in the association of devotees, Krishna is still the center of their lives. And eventually they take up sadhana again in some way or another. But I have seen devotees who seem to have strong sadhana, who chant their rounds, who follow the four regs, but they leave the association of devotees for some reason or another. They go back to college or they go outside, they get a job. Eventually, because of a lack of sadhu sangha, they give up their sadhana anyways. So they give up both sadhu sangha and their sadhana. So that's one reason why I added that perspective, that perhaps sadhu sangha is even more important, because it keeps the sadhana alive in our life. And my spiritual master, he quotes Srila Prabhupada in one class. He was saying how Prabhupada was explaining how nothing external can actually cause havoc in our movement. And Prabhupada was saying the only thing that can cause havoc in our movement are internal problems. You know, problems with devotees, conflict with devotees, and non-cooperation. And I was just reading in the fourth canto, Vishnu is speaking to the Prachetas. One of the first things he says, I have it written down here, he says that, I am very pleased by your friendly relationships with one another. And in the purport, Prabhupada was describing how Krishna is pleased when the devotees cooperate with one another and they have loving dealings. And then in a purport, Prabhupada says that among Vaishnavas, there may be some differences of opinions. It's natural, even in the spiritual world, some devotees have different opinions. But he said, these opinions are due to everyone's personal identity. It's not wrong to have different opinions than others. But despite all personal differences, the cult of Krishna consciousness must continue. It must continue despite these differences of opinions. And my spiritual master in the same class was describing how Maya Devi actually knows each and every one of us better than we even know ourselves. She knows our weaknesses. She knows what we like, what we dislike. She knows everything going on. And she knows how to actually use a very subtle particular situation in our life that is very hard for us to pick up on. It may even be unperceptible to us, but she will somehow use our weaknesses to divide the Vaishnavas, to create some hostility and have us act out of envy or anger without us even knowing that it's happening. And once we commit this Vaishnava Aparad, my spiritual master was comparing Vaishnava Aparad to cancer. To cancer. Cancer you cannot see beyond the surface. And many times it's undetectable to the person who has it. They may not have it, or they may not know they have it until it's too late. They go, they get diagnosed, and the doctor says you have a few months to live. So this Vaishnava Aparad, many of the times, seems like nothing happens to us. Seems like I did this, I saw that devotee blast me or whatever, that other devotee, but he seems to still be doing good, nothing has happened to him. So maybe it's not so bad after all, but it just takes some time for that Aparad to fructify. And the fructification comes a lot of the times in the form of what I just mentioned, leaving the association of the Vaishnavas, which means eventually losing a taste for hearing and chanting, and oftentimes giving up devotional service altogether. My friend, my mentor, and my Sankirtan leader in Los Angeles, Bhrigupati Prabhu, he gives a similar example. He told me one time that a lot of the times devotees, when they leave the temple or they leave the movement, they're thinking they're doing it out of their own will, that I am making an intelligent decision. I have so many good reasons why I'm making this decision to leave. But Bhrigupati says that they don't know that actually Maya is kicking them out because of their offenses or whatever. Maya is making them leave. And she's making them think that they're doing it by their own intelligence. It's like Subhari Muni, we see great yogi, offended Garuda, had to fall down from his yogic position. But someone who is a good example is Haridas Thakur. Now he was tempted by Maya Devi herself. We can't even conceive of the beauty that Maya Devi took on as the form of a woman. Maya Devi herself came to tempt Haridas Thakur, but instead of him falling prey, she became his disciple. And the example of Haridas Thakur is a combination of a couple things. First of all, he was non-envious. He was humble. And simultaneously, he was always absorbed in chanting, always absorbed in his devotional service. So I just heard this the other day. In Los Angeles, Srila Prabhupada was up in his quarters, in his room, and his disciple Bharadwaj was at that time married to Rukmini Devi, husband and wife. Bharadwaj came up to Srila Prabhupada's quarters, and Srila Prabhupada asked, "Where is your wife, Rukmini?" And Bharadwaj said, "Srila Prabhupada, she was supposed to follow me, but I don't know, she's always busy. She's always busy doing something." And then, right after that, Rukmini Devi came into the room, and Prabhupada said to her, "Yes, stay always busy, busy, busy. Otherwise, Maya will say, come and play with me." So this is how we actually stay aloof from the influence of wanting to go play with Maya again. Krishna says to keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service. If you are looking at the deities, automatically you're not watching television. If you're eating pakoras and halva, you're not eating hamburgers or whatever. So if we're always engaged in spiritual activity, then we don't even have time to think of performing material activity. Iha yasya hirir dasye karmana, karmana, how's it go? Iha yasya hirir dasye karmana manasagira nikilas vapivasa stu jivan muktas uchite. One always engaged with body, mind, and words in devotional service, he is considered liberated, even in this material world. And in the West, we go to rock concerts sometimes, music festivals, and it's basically the epicenter and the hub of Kali Yuga and Maya. And I won't give details, but I will give one example that when Srila Prabhupada came to San Francisco, I think it was 1967, his disciples, Mukunda Prabhu and Shyamasundar, arranged so that he can speak at the Avalon Ballroom. And what this was it's a concert venue where famous rock and roll bands would come, and all the hippies, it was famous for all the hippies coming. They would do drugs and dance naked or whatever. And Prabhupada, after the program, he liked the program actually, because people were very receptive. But afterwards, he told his disciple that this place is no place for a brahmachari. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. So we actually go to these types of places, and you may ask, why do we go to these places? It's because actually a lot of books go out there. We distribute a lot of books there, and a lot of devotees are made from these places. But this is one example of how being completely engaged in devotional service, you're kind of more or less aloof from Maya's influence. Because even when I'm there, if I'm focused and I don't space out and I'm fully engaged in my service, I'm not affected by the things going on around me, all the crazy stuff going on around me. I feel protected from my devotional service. It's my shelter. So even Srila Prabhupada was saying how in Los Angeles they had a marathon, a 6-day book distribution marathon, and devotees were almost like not even sleeping. They were out all day for almost, I don't know how long, maybe 15 hours or more, something like that, during the, I think it was the December marathon. And Prabhupada mentioned how this 6-day book distribution marathon is real transcendental samadhi. These devotees are not influenced by the material energy. Prabhupada said that. They are not influenced by the material energy. So this is the way in Kali Yuga, how to transfer ourselves from the influence of Mahamaya to the influence of Yogamaya is not necessarily book distribution. I just use those examples because that's my thing, that's what I do. But to be fully absorbed in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, this Lord Chaitanya gives you the protection, and from pleasing Nitai Gauranga, you actually gain access to being absorbed in Yoga Maya. You have access to becoming absorbed and relishing the pastimes of Vrindavan, and that's basically the idea. Does someone have one question maybe before prasadam? I was asked by a couple of senior devotees to save time for questions, and I accidentally didn't do it, so I apologize for anybody listening. One question from this Prabhu here. Oh, yeah.
So, whatever we have done before coming to respond, so now we understand that whatever is stated, that Prabhupada stated for us.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Whatever Prabhupada stated for us, when we were staying in the temple, we understand this is by Prabhupada Singh.
Is that a question or a statement? Or?
Question, I'm asking. Is that we are having Prabhupada's mercy, we still be at the temple?
Oh, is it Prabhupada's mercy that we're still living at a temple? Yeah, of course, yeah. Just fact that the temple exists is Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada created our good fortune. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we have to desire to want to be Krishna conscious, that's for sure. We have to desire to get Prabhupada's mercy. Many people met Prabhupada and spoke to Prabhupada, but they didn't take it very serious. It's because their desire was different. But we see other people who took it serious. So yeah, it's our desire, and it's Prabhupada's mercy at the same time. Sometimes devotee has enmity with each other. How is that? It's because we're still influenced by the lower modes of material nature. Unfortunately, I remember Prabhupada did tell his Western disciples that my Western disciples are not afraid of Maya enough. So if we don't take the dangers of Vaishnava aparad serious, knowing that this will hamper our opportunity to get Krishna prema, a lack of understanding the philosophy, that we may be loose in our dealings with others. And familiarity breeds contempt. If you're around people all the time, then the tendency is to kind of let down your guard, and there's an opportunity to quarrel or argue. Hope that made sense. You know better than I do, Prabhu. You can give a better answer. Thank you. Hare Krishna.